morning to turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 27. Just want to read one verse. We're going to look at several verses by way of background, but we just want to read this one verse, verse 36, Matthew chapter 27. And sitting down, they watched him there. That, of course, has reference to Christ upon the cross. And again, by way of background, on the evening of the Passover, Jesus was betrayed and arrested. We read that in chapter 26, verses 47 through verse 56. And according to the book of John, if you leave a mark there in Matthew and turn over to John 18, after they arrested Christ, they led him first to Annas in verse 13 and led him away to Annas first, for he was father-in-law to Caiaphas, which was the high priest that year. And then notice if we go back to Matthew chapter 26, verse 59, we see in verse 57 he's taken to Caiaphas, but first he was taken to Annas according to John chapter 18. So now he is before Caiaphas, the high priest, and in verse 59 through 61 we get an idea of what went on during this time. Now the chief priests and elders and all council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death, but they found none. That is, they couldn't find any credible witnesses. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last, or finally, came two false witnesses. And they said, this fellow, pointing to Jesus, said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. These witnesses that have come forth have made their accusation. Caiaphas begins to question Jesus concerning this accusation in verse 62 and verse 63. And the high priest arose and said unto him, Jesus, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witnesses witness against thee? But Jesus held his peace. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God, that thou tell us whether thou be Christ, the Son of God. Verse 64, Jesus said unto him, Thou hast said. Nevertheless, I say unto you, hereafter shall you see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Then we see the response to Christ's answer. Then the high priest rent his clothes, that is his own clothes, saying, He hath spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard his blasphemy. What think ye? They, that is the council, said, He is guilty of death. Then did they spit in his face and buffeted him, and others smote him with the palms of their hands, saying, Prophesy unto us, thou Christ, who is he that smote thee? And then the next morning, Jesus Christ was led away to Pilate. In Matthew 27 and verse 1, when the morning was come, so that would be at 6 a.m., when the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. When they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor. Now, Matthew's account of what transpired before Pilate is recorded there in verses 11 through verse 14. And according to Mark and Luke and John, it was at this juncture, what we read there in verses 11 through 14, that Pilate discovered that Jesus really belonged to Herod's jurisdiction. So he sends him to Herod. Now notice in Luke chapter 23, Luke chapter 23 and verse 7. And as soon as he, Pilate, knew that he belonged unto Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was at Jerusalem at that time. And then Herod, of course, proceeded to question Jesus, and then he would send him back to Pilate. Now notice again in Luke chapter 23, we see Herod questioning Jesus in verse 9. Then he questioned him in many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. And Herod with his men of war set him at naught and mocked him and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him again to Pilate. Now, according to Luke, in verses 13 through verse 15 here of Luke chapter 23, Pilate called together the chief priests and the rulers of the people. And basically what he said to them was, neither I nor Herod have found anything worthy of death in this man. So now Pilate, in an attempt to appease the people, offered to release Jesus and crucify a notable criminal by the name of Barabbas, and we see what happened there. If we go back to Matthew chapter 27, we see that the people, of course, in verse 20, they say, release Barabbas, destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said unto them, whether of the twain will ye that release unto you? They said, Barabbas. Pilate said unto them, what shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? They all say unto him, let him be crucified. And the governor said, why? What evil hath he done? But they cried out the more, saying, let him be crucified. When Pilate saw that he could nothing prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it. Then answered all the people and said, his blood be upon us and on our children. What a statement. Still paying for it today. Then released he Barabbas unto them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. And then Jesus is led away by the soldiers in verse 27. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus unto the common hall, gathered unto him the whole band of soldiers, and they stripped him and put on him a scarlet robe. And when they had plaited a crown of thorns, they put it upon his head and a reed in his right hand. And they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, hail, King of the Jews. And they spit upon him and took the reed and smote him on the head. And after that they had mocked him, they took the robe off from him and put his own raiment on him and led him away to crucify him. So there he is. Jesus Christ is bloody. He's bruised. The crown of thorns is been shoved unto his skull. One of the most vascular parts of the human body. His back, the skin of his back has been torn by the scourging. The ligaments and the muscles and the tendons have been lacerated by the scourging, and now they're underway to the place of crucifixion. Jesus perhaps moving a little slowly, and the people anxious to crucify Christ, they force a man by the name of Simon to carry the crossbar, which Jesus would be crucified upon. And in verse 33, when they were come unto a place called Golgotha, that is to say, a place of the skull. So they come to Golgotha, which was just a small hill outside of the city of Jerusalem. They offer Jesus some analgesic there in verse 34. They gave him vinegar to drink, mingled with gall. And when he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. And they crucified him. That is, there at Golgotha, they began the process of crucifixion. It was at this point that the crossbar would have been laid upon the ground. Jesus would have been thrown to the ground upon his back, and his hands would have been nailed to the crossbar, of course sending tremendous pain throughout his body. Then that crossbar would eventually be lifted, and all the weight of Jesus' body at that point is on the ligaments and bones of the wrist. These are supporting the weight of his entire body. And then, of course, we see that they would then take that crossbar and they would nail it to the post, and then they would nail Jesus' feet into the post. With all that in mind, again, we want to read our text verse, and then we want to read parts of some other verses for our thought. Verse 36, and sitting down, they watched him there. That probably referring to the soldiers sitting down, watching Jesus after they had parted his garments. In verse 39, they that passed by reviled him, wagging or shaking their heads. Verse 44, the thieves also. Verse 47, some of them that stood there. Verse 49, the rest said. Verse 54, now when the centurion and they that were with him watching Jesus. And verse 55, and many women were there beholding afar off. All of these verses speak of the people that were present at Golgotha. Some were sitting there at the foot of the cross. Some were walking by. Some were standing there. But there were many, many different people there that day. And they all saw and felt different things. What they saw and what they felt really depended upon their perception of the one who was on that center cross, Jesus Christ. Most in that crowd that day felt great malice. They felt great contempt. Their hearts were filled with indignation. Their hearts were filled with irritation toward the one who was upon that central cross. And they mocked. And they ridiculed. And they verbally denounced the one on that center cross. And they verbally condemned and attacked him. Notice in verse 39 of Matthew 27 again, they that passed by reviled him, wagging their heads. And as they were passing by, they're saying, "Thou that destroyest the temple," that is, they look toward that center cross, and they say, "You that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself. Save yourself. Come on down from that cross, if thou be the Son of God. If thou be the Son of God, if you are who you say you are, come down from the cross." These were the people that were just passing by. And then we read, likewise, the chief priest. They said the same things. And then we see the thieves also. One on the right, one on the left. And they're saying the same things. If you are who you say you are, save yourself. Come on down from the cross. Let us see you work a miracle now. There was much disdain, much contempt in that crowd. No doubt some who were in the crowd were horrified at what they saw. Some perhaps were appalled at what they saw. We know that there were some who felt some pity. And who felt some sorrow, certainly in verse 55, the women that were beholding afar off, which followed Jesus, ministering unto him. No doubt they felt sorrow in their hearts, and no doubt they felt some pity in their hearts, and no doubt they felt love in their hearts. And then there were some in that crowd who were just indifferent. And they were able to detach themselves from everything that was going on. But we want to notice verse 36 again. Sitting down, they watched him there. There was a time, you and I that are saved, if we can go back to the time before we were saved, there was a time when we sat with those mentioned in verse 36. And there was a time when I passed by with those mentioned in verse 39. And there was a time when we stood with the chief priests and the scribes, demeaning the person of Jesus Christ. Or perhaps you don't fit into that crowd. But there was a time, even though you knew the story, and even though you knew the history, that you were indifferent. And you were detached from what happened at Golgotha. But now, since the Lord saved my soul, my view of Golgotha is quite different than it used to be. What took place at Golgotha impacts me. It has a great effect upon me. We want to speak this morning on the subject of what I see and feel at Golgotha. And I'd like to invite you today to take a mental trip to this place called Golgotha. And I invite you to sit at the feet or at the foot of that cross. I invite you to stand and behold the one upon that cross. Or perhaps you just want to pass by. But as you do, behold the one upon that center cross. As we arrive at Golgotha, we see three crosses. Three crosses. And upon each one of those crosses is a man. Is a man that has been condemned. And as the custom was in those days, above each cross was an inscription that would state their crime. Cross on the right, and the cross on the left, we read the inscription, thief. Thief. In the inscription on the middle cross, we see it is recorded in verse 37 of Matthew 27. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Now, anybody who was just passing by that day, that would have caught their eye. The word thief, that wouldn't have meant much. They've seen that before. But as they look on that center cross, and they read what it says, it says, this is Jesus. Now, a great crowd, of course, had gathered. And it seems like everyone's attention is focused upon that middle cross. Everyone's eyes are upon the one who is on that middle cross. And it's very obvious that the one upon that middle cross is more despised, he is more hated, he is more shunned than the two rotten thieves on either side. And it's very obvious that the one upon that center cross is far more mocked, far more taunted, far more ridiculed than the two no good thieves on the right and on the left. There is far, far more scorn, far, far more disrespect and disgust and hostility and animosity shown to the one on that center cross. In fact, most folks aren't even paying any attention to the other two crosses. All the disgust and all the disdain is directed toward the one on that center cross. In fact, the one upon that center cross was far more intolerable than the thieves on either side. Not only were those who were sitting there and those who were standing there and those who were passing by showing their utter disdain toward the one upon that center cross, but we see the thieves were doing the same thing. Verse 44, the thieves also. They also, in all their excruciating pain, they still had enough hatred, enough disdain for the one on that center cross. And they also are mocking and ridiculing and hurling slander toward that center cross. At Golgotha, again, we cannot help but see very clearly the inscription that is upon that center cross. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. This one who is so despised. He is so rejected so hated, so mocked, so taunted, so ridiculed, and you read the inscription, this is Jesus. Get that in your mind. That ought to make an impression upon every child of God. This is Jesus. And everyone there can see that inscription. This is Jesus. Some might say, well, isn't he the what? Who gave sight to the blind? Isn't he the one who gave hearing to the deaf? Isn't he the one who gave strength to the crippled? Isn't he the one that released the demon possessed? Isn't he the one that raised the dead? This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. And as you look at that center cross, you see unprecedented hostility and animosity directed toward that center cross. And people would wonder, who is this? And there's the inscription. This is Jesus. This is Jesus. The very Son of God. The one who has all the disrespect and hostility and animosity and hatred thrown at him is the very Son of God. The heir of all things. The master and possessor of all things. The creator of all. This is Jesus. God himself. Clothed in a body of flesh. See him. See him as you arrive at Golgotha. God himself. Clothed in a body of flesh. Again at Golgotha, we look with everyone else. All attention is upon that center cross. And again, we cannot get out of our minds the inscription. This is Jesus. The one who is so despised. And there was a time I sat in that crowd. And despised him. The one who is so hated, so shunned, so ridiculed and mocked and taunted. This is Jesus. And we see the people. They're sitting there and they're looking at that center cross. We see some that pass by and immediately they look over to that center cross. And as they pass by, they cast forth their mockery and ridicule. And then there are others who are standing around. But they're all doing the same thing. They're all gazing upon that center cross. All attention focused upon that cross. And most, they are filled with and they begin to display utter disgust for that one. Utter hostility and animosity toward that one upon that center cross. So there at Golgotha, we see that one upon that center cross. This is Jesus. I've come to learn, and you have too that are saved. He's there voluntarily. He's there willingly. He went to that center cross. He went to that cross willingly. He went there readily. He went there intentionally. Now the thieves, they did everything they could to avoid getting caught. But this one, he went to that cross deliberately. He went there on purpose. He went there gladly. He went there with pleasure. And gladly and with pleasure, he left the glories and majesties of heaven, where all the angels sang his praise. Look at him now. He is the object of ridicule and mockery and hatred. But he willingly left where all the angels sang his praise. And he willingly and deliberately and intentionally came to this sin-cursed earth to die the death of a felon. To die the death of a criminal. Again, read the inscription. This is Jesus. There's none like him. There's no one else that you can compare to this one. This is Jesus. And he came voluntarily to lay down his life. At Golgotha, we look at the other two crosses. And again, we read the inscription. Thief. They were guilty of crimes. But the inscription on that center cross, this is Jesus. This is Jesus. And there he is, with all the bruises. There he is with that crown of thorns embedded in his skull. His body has been mutilated and mangled, but he's not guilty of any crime. All it says is, this is Jesus. They couldn't accuse him of being a thief. This is Jesus. Now they put that there, of course, for mockery. But I believe that was God's word. And I believe God would use that very inscription to bring people to saving faith. Because they couldn't get that out of their minds. This is Jesus. This is Jesus. And he's there without any sin of his own. He is there without any fault, without any blemish. He's holy. He's spotless. He's pure. He's absolutely perfect. Yet, he is despised. He is rejected. He is stricken. He is smitten. He's afflicted. He's wounded. He's chastised, and he is in travail of soul. If you're just passing by, you know why the one on the right is there. Faith. You know why the one on the left is there. Faith. But why is that one in the center cross? Why is he there? Because all it says is this is Jesus. Well, since we've come to be saved, we see why he's there. He's there for me. This is Jesus. Look at him. He's there for me. He's there because my sins were laid upon me. My sins were transferred to Christ. The entire filthy load was put upon Christ. And he who never was a sinner, he who never could be a sinner, willingly, voluntarily, bore the guilt and condemnation of my sin. And he was charged with the debt of my sin. And he became accountable for my sins. And he's on that center cross bearing, receiving what my sins deserved. Remember, he's there voluntarily. He's there on purpose. He's there for me. He's there in my place, dying the death of a criminal. So we look at that center cross. That inscription is embedded in our minds. This is Jesus. Now I know that was for me. That was in my place that he was made a curse. It was for me. And it was in my place that he was so despised and so rejected and put to grief. It was for me. And in my place that he was wounded and bruised. It was for me and in my place that he endured 3 hours of deep, thick, dreadful, excruciating darkness. It was at that time that God the Father forsook his Son. But as you behold that center cross, this is Jesus. Remember, if you're saved, he's there for you. He's there for me. Now at Golgotha, as we behold that central cross, as we read the inscription, this is Jesus, and we know now that he's there for me, he's there in my place, paying a sin debt that I could not pay. And as I behold that center cross, I say, what amazing love. What amazing love. That Christ would go to that cross for me. And I once sat among and stood with and passed by with the ungodly mob that was there that day. But now, what I see at Golgotha is a force. It is a power, a working influence upon my heart. What I see at Golgotha, one of the things I see at Golgotha is just how filthy, how vile, and how wicked my sin is. That causes me to feel great sorrow and grief. But also what I see at Golgotha fills me with jubilation and gratitude and praise. This is Jesus, that the King of Kings would stoop so low for me. What I see at Golgotha gives me a feeling of assurance of my salvation. It also fills me with zeal and determination and passion to serve Him who loved me so much that He went to that cross. You see, at Golgotha, our hearts are filled with love for that one upon that cross. Again, read the inscription. This is Jesus. Allow that to be embedded in your mind. And know that He is there for you. He is there in your place. Knowing that, how can you possibly be indifferent? How can you possibly be apathetic? How can you be unfeeling? Go to Golgotha. Look at that center cross. Read the inscription. This is Jesus. And how can you sit there? How can you pass by that scene untouched, unfeeling? How can you live your life detached from this one? Why would you want to live your life detached from this one? So we go to Golgotha. We behold that center cross. We read the inscription. This is Jesus. Remember, Pilate asked the question, what shall I then do with Jesus? We have to answer that question everything we do. Everything you do something with Jesus. Look at him. Look at him. Get those words in your mind, this is Jesus. Now, child of God, what are you going to do with him? What are you going to do with him? You going to just cast him to the side and live your life as if he didn't exist? Live your life as if he didn't do anything for you? Live your life as if he didn't save your unworthy soul? Is that how you're going to live? Or are we going to go from Golgotha
filled with passion, filled with love. I want to serve. I want to live for this Jesus. If you're here and lost today, this is your only hope. And you may sit at the foot of that cross today, and you may laugh, and you may mock. You may pass by and you may shake your head. You may go from here shaking your head saying, those people are nuts. But I'm telling you today, the one in that central cross, he's your only hope. There is no other. That's it. Now we know at one point while Jesus was on the cross, he looked down upon that multitude and he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Now I believe, you can believe what you want, but I believe that prayer was answered on the day of Pentecost. 3,000 of them were saved. And every one of them had it in their minds, this is Jesus. They could not get away from that. This is Jesus. And whatever your spiritual condition is right now, you can't get away from those words. This is Jesus. This is Jesus. You're going to have to face him. You've got to do something with this one called Jesus. Oh, how I thank God for Golgotha. And then, of course, the story just gets better on Resurrection Sunday. But that's a different message. Brother Larry, you come and lead us in a verse of song. Let's all stand. Brother Larry, lead us in singing.